You're listening to Marvelous Harry, a novel in five fractals, performed and written by Mark A. Rayner. For more information about where to get the book, go to marvelousharry.ca. Chapter 3. Helena gave me a call right after she left Larry, and then told Sheila to have a pass waiting for me at the elevators. Security officer Pottymouth was still on duty when I returned, to my great pleasure. "How nice to see you again," I said. "I believe there's a pass waiting for me. Your name, sir?" I paused for a second. Nope, no insult there. Perhaps I'd been imagining it all before. "Rob Goodman." "Yep, here you go," he said with a smile. "I hope you understand that before I wasn't trying to be difficult. I was just doing my job." "You feculent pusbag." Sure. Feeling too stunned to respond, I took the pass and went to the elevators. Before the doors closed, he waved to me, smiling the whole time. Now, I'm sure I imagined it, but what I heard him say as the door slid shut was, "I hope the cable breaks!" I tried not to think about the possibility. On the ride up to the marketing floor, I noticed the seamless walls of the cubicle, the smooth sound of the ascending device, the flawless liquid crystal display, advertising some crap that was supposed to fill the existential void. It took humans millions of years to evolve to the point where we use tools, and thousands of years for our culture to reach the point where we could watch emaciated supermodels rub sweat-glistening water bottles over their breasts while we ascended or descended. I wondered, what progress might we achieve in the coming decades? Personally, I was still hoping for flying cars and jetpacks. I arrived and Helena showed me into her office. It was an impressive sight. Her desk was huge and faced the mass of windows looking out at the city below. It seemed odd that such a prestigious office, she couldn't open a window, which was kind of a shame. If she'd had a window, she could have opened it a bit to clear the air, you know, so I didn't smell the recognizable funk of angry sex. She closed the door and went to a cabinet on one side of the room. "Do you want something to drink?" she asked me. "Like what?" "Like I'm going to have a scotch. I've got a little bottle of Hunza Cadets here in my fridge." She opened the cabinet and there was a little fridge, the kind you get in hotels. She had a fridge in her office. How cool was that? What the heck is a Hunza Cadets? A Czech joke. A translation of Johnny Walker. I made a face. "How about a Heine then?" I laughed and said, "Sure." See, we really do have nicknames for everything. While she poured her little bottle of Red Label into a glass, I cracked open the can of beer. "Are you allowed to drink in here?" I asked. "Rob, if the boss can bend me over the desk and slap my ass in here, nobody's going to begrudge me a little nip of the water of life afterwards, are they?" I laughed again. "I know you can smell it. Don't even try to deny it." "Yeah, it's pretty bad. You shouldn't assume, though. Not all men have that good a sense of smell." "They do for that smell." "So how is the relationship with Shoot going?" She snorted. "What relationship?" "Well, Irma tells me you've been seeing him." "Irma's a dear. She's sweet. A romantic. No, I'm not having a relationship with him. I've been fucking him. Or he's been fucking me. Is that such a good idea?" "No, not really. It's actually a very bad idea, but I couldn't really finesse my way out of it once it started. My theory is that if he's using me, at the same time I've been doing pretty well at the company, so I haven't made a fuss. It's not all bad, you know, Rob." I ignored that conversational trail, not really wanting to follow where it led. The spirit still showed me all the gory details later, anyway. "But what happens when he gets tired of you?" I asked. "Rob, I'm insulted. How could anyone get tired of me?" "I can't imagine. But he's a narcissist, right?" "Yeah, well, it's already happening. But I have been keeping pretty good minutes in this office, and of course, I've recorded some of our conversations. I don't think I could nail him on a sexual harassment suit, if that's what you mean, but I've got enough to make him think about it from a PR perspective. I've got copies at home and in a safe deposit box." "Well, I'm glad you took some precautions." "Yeah, I've been doing that too." I laughed again. It was easy to forget that hot Helena was also really funny. She could definitely do much better than Shoot, but she hadn't really been trying. From what I could tell, Helen had spent the last 10 years working really hard. "So I have a couple of things to ask," I said. "Why don't you let me start? I've learned a little bit about what Nick's doing here."
"Really?"
"Yeah. I'm supposed to have dinner with the guy who's running the program Nick is in tonight, so I'll have the details, but he's altering DNA. They've already done it in other animals."
"You mean like in vitro animals? Cloning?"
"No, live animals. The Lutch seemed proud of that. They've already done their work with lower animals, and they're starting on humans."
"Holy shit."
"I think that's what's happening to Nick," Helena said.
"What are they doing?"
"That I don't know. Fucking with his DNA. The Lutch said something about wanting to upgrade chimps. So from that, my guess is they're regressing their human subjects."
"Regressing?"
"Did you ever watch Star Trek?"
Yeah.
"Remember the one where Riker turns into a caveman and Worf starts spraying poison all over the crew as they also de-evolve?"
Oh, Helena, the next generation?
Yeah, she said. What?
The middle seasons were good. A hottie who watches Star Trek, even the next generation. How did I not date you?
You never asked, Bonehead.
And that ship has sailed, so don't get any ideas.
I put up my hand, surrendering.
Besides, I wasn't really thinking those thoughts about Helena. In fact, I was thinking she was a bit icky, doing it with shoot and all.
So you think they're turning Nick into a caveman?
Essentially. Or whatever common ancestor we had with chimps. Some sort of pre-human hominid.
Fuckers!
Then I thought about it and said, shit, last night he wasn't stoned. It was his treatment starting to take effect. I swear to God, Helena, last night he was acting like a freaked out stoner, and I thought he'd taken acid with Max. We have to get him some help.
Maybe they can reverse it.
Yeah, we have to get them to reverse it. Nick is weird, but not enough to want to turn into a monkey.
What do we do?
I don't know. We need proof. And then we have to get them to fix it. And don't forget the weather satellite.
Why are you so obsessed with the Oberon project?
Apart from the fact that I worked on it, if Shute tries to control the weather, he's just going to screw things up. It will kill lots of people, I'm sure of it. You know they're launching it today.
What?
I've got my PR team working on something for it right now, actually. Shute's very excited about it. And you're right, it does control the weather.
We have to stop it.
There's nothing I can do, Rob.
Yes, there is.
No, really, there isn't. I've left a back door in the code that I was writing. Kind of access key. If I can get past the gag firewall, I can screw up the satellite, maybe even mess up the launch.
If you can get past the firewall?
I'm not a good enough hacker to do that. But you have a password that gives you access, right?
Not to secure stuff.
I'm sure I'll be able to do something once I'm beyond the firewall.
I don't know, Rob. If you get caught...
You'll get caught, I corrected. I'll be using your account.
So we'll get caught.
The Shade of Antonia was right. I shouldn't be a hypocrite about it. If we got caught, it was a major prison term, assuming we got caught.
Helena turned in her chair to look out the window, tapping her teeth with her fingers. I never knew what she was thinking, but I didn't want her to reason it out too much. It was insane. She would be throwing away everything she'd worked for during the last 10 years.
Do you know what Shute is doing with his wife's sister? I said.
Ariadne? She asked, turning back to look at me again. Is that the one he wants me to have the threesome with?
The thing about talking with Helena is that she never made it easy.
I didn't know that. She didn't mention that.
You know her?
What's she like?
I thought for a moment and said, nobody else I've ever met.
She smiled and said, oh, Rob, you're in love.
Yeah, probably. It's not just lust, anyway.
I could have slept with her last night and I didn't.
That sounds serious. I'm jealous.
I thought I was a bonehead. Anyway, I'd like to help her and all the people he's hurting. Will hurt if they launch that thing.
And Nick, if the treatments are taking effect on him already, that also explains his behavior yesterday. I had a pretty intense coffee with him. He got me going with that banana thing.
What banana thing?
Oh, I don't want to know. Helena grinned at me.
You don't have a thing for Nick, do you?
No, not at all.
Maybe.
Not sure.
Hot Helena may have a problem, I suddenly thought. Not to mention Irma.
But I tried to keep us on topic.
How do we get evidence of this? From the Lech?
Oh, please, he's such a dog. All I have to do is get him in bed and he'll tell me everything. But I'd really rather not. I figure if you're going to sabotage Oberon, you might as well gather the evidence about Nick then, too.
My back door won't work for that.
Why did you do that, anyway? What if you got caught?
They wouldn't have suspected me, because they didn't let me see enough of the software all at once.
All these secrets, Helena sighed.
It's titillating, isn't it?
Yeah. Look, I think we can do this. I can find data on the monkey experiments, but should we?
What, break the law or bring down Shute?
Yeah, bring the bastard down. I've never met the man, and I don't like him.
You must hate him.
It's complicated. But on the whole, Gargantuan would be better off without him.
I would too.
But short of losing everything, there's no way to get away from him.
There is now.
Guess there is. Helena thought about how Shute had been shouting at nothing, and she knew she would do it. But I could lose everything, she sighed.
You could go to jail, too, I added.
Yeah, there's that. But if we collect the evidence, then perhaps we can make a case that we're looking out for the public and the stockholders.
So let's make a plan.
Helena and I figured out our best course of action, but while we did, Nick's last trip to Gargantuan was about to happen. I remember too late. The scientists put him in the magnet again and let the thing finish the resequencing. This third treatment did the actual changes, and as far as the scientists knew, they were affecting both physical and mental alterations, though most of them were supposed to be physical. When he came out of the magnet, he had a noticeably heavy beard, but other than that, he didn't seem much changed. Mr. Squeeze took a blood sample and then they let Nick go, telling him to return in 2 days for more tests, if he lasted that long. Nick felt great. He'd never experienced a sensation of being so alive or alert before. His sense of smell was incredibly acute, but he did not like what he was sensing. Chemicals, stale coffee, and a lot of fear. The workers in the building were afraid most of the time. Not that they were aware of it, but Nick suddenly was. The stench of all that dread almost panicked him, but he managed to keep it under control. He was seeing everything with greater clarity, and even hearing everything better, too. They put the mask on top of his eyes, and he got even more frightened, but he managed to hold it together while they took him from deep underground to the lobby. There they released him, like he was a wild creature being set free in the forest. In the lobby, the air was clearer, and there was a less oppressive stench of fear, though it was still there. Nick wondered why there was so much terror in the building proper. Surely it was safe in there. No predators could get in. That moment, Shute's private elevator arrived at the lobby, and he exited. He didn't even notice Nick, but Nick sure spotted him. Or more accurately, he smelled him. That, Nick's rapidly changing mind told him, is a predator. His flight instinct kicked in, and Nick ran up to the coffee shop, which overlooked the lobby. He'd had those nice bananas there with a friend. She was a friend. He knew Helena was a friend. Shute strode across the lobby majestically, his subjects pretending they didn't spot him, or if there was no way to fake it, to look properly obsequious. They would have had a hard time matching Denny in that regard. Shute's weasel-faced personal assistant followed a couple of paces behind him, taking notes while Shute talked loudly about a conference he was supposed to speak at the next week. Then he left the building. Nick didn't know it, but Helen and I knew that Shute wouldn't be making that conference. He was going to have way too much on his hands by then. With his presence gone, the collective mood of the people in the lobby changed. The security guards let their shoulders sag noticeably, executives returned to their conversation, and the servers behind the counter resumed their chat about the concert they planned to attend that night. They didn't have any bananas for sale, but Nick detected their banana bread, which was delicious. The other customers stared at him while he squatted in a tall stool at the counter, holding the thick brown slice and sniffing it with a look of ecstasy on his face. Eventually, one of the servers asked, "Is there anything else I can get for you, sir?"
"No,
Nick said, and bit into the bread. He sat there for a while, knowing that he was supposed to be there for some reason. When he detected Helena's perfume, he knew what that was. "Nick," she said, breathless. She'd run down to the lobby when Sheila reminded her that she was supposed to meet him for coffee. I was still working at her computer. Nick noticed her arousal even before she did. "It's good you're here. I was hoping you'd be waiting for me." "Good bread," he said, and offered her a piece. She accepted and leaned onto another tall stool at the counter, one leg propped up underneath her. She bit delicately at the edge of the bread. "Rob told me to take care of you tonight, Nick, just in case what I think might happen actually does." Nick had a sly look on his face, which was becoming marvelously hairy. He smiled at her and cupped her cheek again with his hand. She took his hand and kissed its palm.
"Ooh,"
Nick said. Chapter 4. A full day had gone by, and nothing. Seedy was freaking out. Had Spider fucked up the delivery? What if there was some kind of GPS implant under Lyta's skin somewhere, and they're using it to find them? How long before they figured out who it was? "What is taking so long?" Seedy cried.
"I don't know," Spider answered, with his mouth full of noodles.
He'd gone out earlier to pick up some Chinese food, and even if neither Seedy nor Lyta wanted any, he wasn't going to let it go to waste. He'd already inhaled all the egg rolls and was working his way through the Singapore noodles. "Are you sure he got the letter?"
"Dude, yeah, I watched through the window. The faggoty waiter slipped it into his bill. Why don't you eat something?"
"Not hungry." Spider grinned and said, "It's good." Seedy chewed on his scraggly mustache. The letter had been clear. Shute was to gather $6 million in cash, and then he was to call them at the number they gave in the letter, a Jack cell phone they'd purchased for the kidnapping. And they would tell him where to deliver the money. They'd given him 24 hours to do this. What was going on? "What is going on?" Seedy asked again.
"I'm eating, you fucking freak," Spider growled.
"No, with Shute. Why hasn't he called? We have his daughter." Hippolyta, who had been drifting to sleep on and off during the day, was bored. There was nothing to do but try to figure out where she was. She thought somewhere near the bay, as she heard the occasional ship horn, and listened to the Wonder Twins argue. She interrupted them. "He won't pay, Seedy. I told you. He's a cheap bastard." Spider grimaced. Shut up, you bitch, or I'll come in and slap you, he shouted. Bits of half-masticated noodle sprang from his mouth. Seedy got up and went into the other room, where they decided to tie Lita to the bed. They decided to take the duct tape off her mouth when they realized that nobody could hear her scream in the near-abandoned building, and that even if someone did hear, they were likely doing something much worse somewhere else. "So you really think he'd let you die?" Seedy said, pressing his hands together while he stood in the doorway. "Totally," Hippolyta said. "He's a bastard." "Fuck. Fuck, fuck, fuck. But I have a suggestion," he said. "What? What is it?" "First you have to untie me." "How about your legs? I'll untie your legs." "Don't do it," Spider shouted from the other room. Once a kitchen-slash-dining area, now a fetid linoleum haven for a diverse population of vermin. "I'm doing it, Spider. If she has an idea, I want to hear it." "Okay, Lita, no funny business." She rolled her eyes. "What am I going to do?" "I don't know. Kick me with those big black boots of yours," Seedy said. "In the right circumstances, that might be fine, but not now." "Oh, fuck me," she said. "Love to." "I won't tell you a thing if you touch me, you scabby fucktard."
"Don't touch her, you perv!" Spider shouted again.
"I was kidding," Seedy grinned. "Here, I'll untie her legs." The blood rushed back into her feet, and Hippolyta grimaced as she got the worst case of pins and needles she'd ever had. They passed, and she was able to wiggle herself upright on the bed, her skirt lifting up as she did. Seedy stared at her box like a cat watching a cockroach. "Nice panties," he grinned. "I would have thought you a goth wore something a little less revealing than a thong. Boxers, maybe."
"Don't use that word," Lita growled.
"What, boxers?"
"No, the other word."
"Panties?" "Fuck yourself. If you say it again, I won't tell you anything."
"Fine, fine.
I'm not a goth, I'm emo."
"Right."
He continued staring at her underwear, or what he could plainly see through her underwear. "Seriously, put my skirt back down or you get nothing."
"Oh, come on, I'm only looking."
"Put your skirt down, you fucking ibist!"
Spider slurred through another mouthful of noodles. Seedy sighed and pulled her black miniskirt down, muttering, "By holy of holies." Hippolyta was a bit freaked out at this point. Would Seedy actually... She didn't want to think about it. It was just too gross. He continued to sit on the bed next to her as she talked, his halitosis strong enough to make it hard for her to think. "My dad won't pay you anything, but if you let me go, I'll give you the access codes for his office." "How will that help us?" "Keeps us safe in there."
"No shit."
"Nope. I've seen him open it, and I know he has lots of money in there. But I'd be willing to bet that he also keeps most of his incriminating crap in there, too."
"Incriminating?"
"Like, stuff that could get him arrested or embarrass him in front of the media," Hippolyta said.
"I know what incriminating means," he hissed. "Don't confuse me with Spider."
"Whatever. You should really think about brushing your teeth once in a while, you know."
"Fuck you," he said, and he put his hand on her thigh.
He held it there for a moment and stared into her eyes. She stared back, knowing that she couldn't show any fear, or he would do what he was thinking about. His fingers drummed on her thigh, slightly higher, closer to her crotch. "He might not give $6 million for me, but he will for his secrets." Seedy lifted her skirt up again and took another look at her panties.
"It sounds better than waiting with our thumbs up our asses," Spider said, leaning in the doorway.
He'd put down the Singapore noodles and now held his Glock. Seedy glanced at Spider and the gun. "Okay," Seedy sighed. "You tell us and we'll let you go."
"No way," Hippolyta said. "You let me go and then I'll tell you." "Sounds like a Mexican standoff to me," Spider said, returning to the kitchen. "Let me know when you've figured it out."
You have been listening to Marvelous Harry, a novel in 5 fractals. Written and performed by Mark A. Rayner. For more information about where you can purchase a copy of Marvelous Harry, go to marvelousharry.ca.